Would you turn with me in Matthew chapter 4? We are going to study this interaction that Jesus has with his disciples who aren't yet his disciples. They are his followers who aren't yet following him. And he is going to set some things in motion that we're going to study that have implications on us. And then when we're done together this morning, I'm going to invite you to respond with a specific response. So brace yourself, steady yourself, prepare yourself. I'm going to ask you to take a step and do something that you may not do otherwise if your pastor doesn't urge you to do it. Okay, so let's look with me, if you would, in Matthew chapter 4, verses 19 and 20, and put your finger there. You can follow along with us. It's a very brief exchange, and we're going to look at what it is to be a disciple maker. Now, you've got this in your notes. To be a disciple maker, you agree to something. You agree to something. As a disciple who's following Jesus, who is training us to make disciples, you agree to something. There's something that comes along with that, and specifically, that means this. You agree to live for something larger and rely on a power greater than yourself. So that's what you agree to. When you decided that you were going to follow Jesus, and this is a part of what you agreed to, that specifically you were going to live for something larger and rely on a power greater than yourself. When I help people get married, I often get the privilege of working with couples who are going to be married and we're preparing for the wedding ceremony. Something very similar happens each time we do this. I find premarital counseling helpful but difficult. One of the reasons is because we're trying to prepare somebody for something that they've never done or have never been really experienced before. And I like to describe it to couples this way. Prepare yourself for the wedding day, which during that wedding day, at that ceremony, what we're going to do is we're going to have two funerals in one wedding. And this is how I like to explain it. What you're doing is you're dying to the lesser life mission of living for yourself, and you're going to come alive to take on a mission that's greater than you, which is a mission of the two becoming one and having a new life together. And what you're leaving and letting go of is all of your self-interest, all of your self-reliance. You're dying to that, and you're coming alive to a new life, which is a greater mission because it's greater than yourself. And isn't it true they're going to need a power that's greater than themselves? How many of you know what I mean when I say two funerals and a wedding that day? How many of you are still living in the funeral stage? Anybody willing to admit that? That's not funny. That's not a funny joke. Marriage is awesome. Lowercase a. But it is so fantastic. But it is signing up for leaving a smaller mission and embracing taking on a larger one where you need a greater power. And really, how can you convince someone to let go and leave their old small life for a new one? How can you convince someone of that? Do you know how God convinces us to do it? By letting us get married and learning how to do that. And here, Jesus is calling out to these fishermen, and he goes like this. It's recorded in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 4, verses 19 and 20. Jesus called out to them, "Come, follow me." You remember what we said at the very beginning of this series, that following Jesus is a come and follow, go and make arrangement. You come and follow, go and make. That's the bookends of how Jesus sees us as his disciples. And here's Jesus saying, come, follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people. They already know how to fish for fish. It's not what Jesus is asking them to do. He doesn't say, hey, come follow me, I'm going to make you better fishermen. He said, in fact, something very, very different, that I'm going to show you how to fish for people. And they left their nets at once, and they followed him. They left their nets at once, and they followed him. And what Jesus is demonstrating here is that he really did not intend to reach you, your family, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, and classmates. He didn't intend to reach them by himself. He expected that he would have to reach all of those people with his ministers, not primarily his earthly ministry. He was going to have to hand the mission off to other people. They were going to have to perpetuate it for generations to come if he was going to actually reach other people who are non-believers and bring them to saving faith. I realize now when I look back in my life that most of my real spiritual life was shaped on missions trips. After a couple of dozen missions trips, I can tell you that there's a contrast with the way that I live my life during a missions trip and the way that I live my life every day. And I have to admit that I've never more fully alive than I am when I'm on a missions trip. And it doesn't mean, of course, that when I'm not on a missions trip, I experience some kind of personal death. But I will tell you, it is so invigorating to be on a missions trip and know what the mission is and be completely devoted to it and go all in preparing for it. And when you get there, you're fully alive, obeying Jesus, making sacrifices, and living for a mission larger than yourself. And every now and then when we're on a missions trip, we have to remind some of the missions teammates that, hey, you remember when you decided to come on this mission trip? One of the things you agreed to is you're not going to live for yourself. So wake up. It's not nap time. We're all working. You're sleeping. So come along with us. And I believe that this has been the reason that I'm most alive when I live every day like it's a mission to fish for people. That's when I'm the most alive. But this has been a difficult series for me to preach because I happen to believe that you ought to practice what you preach. So when you preach about living everyday discipleship or living on a mission bigger and greater than yourself, to follow Jesus means less of yourself and more for other people. I got to admit, it's easier to tell you to do this than it is to actually practice it myself. It's much easier to say, here's what you ought to be doing as God's church, and somehow exempt myself as the trainer and the teacher. But I have a growing conviction that I ought to be the one modeling this. So when I start reading this and studying this and preaching this, I hear the Spirit at work in me saying, you have to lead this. You can't just preach this. It's been increasingly burdensome. In fact, I've decided to stop this message today. This is the last message today because I'm sick. And there are so many competing missions in my life that are good missions, that are valuable missions, that are vital missions, but they're smaller missions. And I often hear the Spirit saying, Dan, I have a fish for people mission that's bigger than yourself. It's bigger than all. In fact, all of your little missions is how you accomplish the larger mission. And I hear routinely, I feel urged by God to do a more specific and precise job living this bigger mission that is larger and greater than all of my little missions. And when I do that, I know that these are the ways that God uses me as an everyday disciple to become his body, saturating every single place with his presence so that every person who's around me has a daily encounter with him in every way. And I, for one, need to tell you publicly, I'm committed to live this, not just to preach this to you guys. I have to find ways to change my routines, change my priorities, and adjust my life to emphasize and to prioritize this fish for people mission that I believe is the heart of the gospel message and is the heart of the mission of someone who is serious about their faith and following Jesus. But this is one of the things I've thought in the past is I'm not always sure I can make the changes needed. And I wonder if you feel the same way. I remember when I was young and I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, and then despite growing to 6'4" and world-class speed and strength, I eventually discovered that I'm not going to be a Major League Baseball player. At some point in my life, it occurred to me, to be honest with you, it was probably 13 years old when I realized I'm pretty much done growing. I am who I'm going to be. And it was easier said than done. I eventually let go of my dream that it's never really going to happen. It took some maturity. It took some wisdom. It took some, it just took some honesty with myself. And I let go of this idea that I was ever really going to play professional baseball. And some of you may have had the same experience where you wanted to do and be one thing, and over time you realize it's not going to happen. And you've just let it go. Wanted to be a millionaire, billionaire. You wanted to be an entrepreneur. You wanted to be this, that, the other thing. Eventually, you just let it go. Over time and with maturity, it's easy for us to decide those things are out of reach. And even though we may want to fish for people, it's possible that we have already convinced ourselves that we can't do it. I'm not outgoing enough. I don't really know how. I didn't really grow up learning. I learned how to be a church attender. I learned how to attend classes, Christian classes. I didn't really learn how to make disciples. You may have also given up on the mission because you feel like it's not your gift. You don't have the gift of evangelism. Or maybe you're afraid someone's going to ask you a question. You don't know what the answer is. You don't know how to explain the story to somebody. If they were to say to you, so what is this Christian faith that you speak of? And you say, I have my pastor's email address. I'll give you his email address. And it's possible that you may feel like, and this is how I feel, I don't like selling things that I'm interested in. I don't like being sold something I'm interested in buying. Even if I want to buy something, when someone tries to sell it to me, all of a sudden I have this reaction. And some of you may feel like, I'm not good at this because I don't want to feel like I'm selling something to somebody. No one likes to be sold, especially when it has to do with this something that means so much, your own faith. Or in some cases, I think we've convinced ourselves that there isn't anybody left on the planet who wants to hear what I have to share. They just don't want to hear it. So what do? Corporately, we decide, just letting this go. Not really going to do this. Not really going to be able to. So before I explain why we can do it, and before I help urge you to commit yourself to do it, I think it's important for us to define some terms. What do we mean when we say the word disciple? It is someone who is learning to submit all of their everyday life to the leadership of Jesus. So when we say discipleship or disciple, we mean there's somebody who's learning, and they're learning to submit every area of life to the leadership and lordship of Jesus. That's what a disciple does. Obedience and worship and so on, every aspect of their life. Then the word mission means to make disciples of Jesus who make disciples. That's what the mission is. The fish for people mission, according to Jesus, is go and make disciples. It means that when you and I accept this mission, it is a disciple-making mission. And it's also, that's why we have our mission, North Central Church Family, is to make reproducing disciples. Because we believe this is the mission that Jesus has kind of downloaded, offloaded to us. So we envision that this is what we are to be about. And when you measure things, you measure, are we effectively making disciples, and are we effectively moving towards becoming a multiplying church? And so then there's this word missional. Some of you heard this word missional. We've used it occasionally. It shows up with the phrase missional community. What in the world does missional mean? Here's what it means. It means when a sent people who belong to Jesus, there's a sent people who realize that God is a sending God and we are a sent people, when they start to do anything or something with the intention of making disciples. That's the intention. That's the motivating factor, is that someone is moving out in relationship and they're showing and sharing the love and care and affection of God so vividly, but they're doing so to make disciples, to begin making disciples. So that's what a mission is. Now, let me say this. I've also come across some of the church growth strategy, which is kind of a mega church approach to disciple making, can sometimes seem like disciple making or mission, but it isn't. Here's what I mean by that. There are some churches that have gotten very, very good at assimilating new people into identifying where they're gifted and helping them to take the next step of supporting and volunteering to help make Sunday services and weekly programming more effective. And what I mean by that is, it's not discipleship, it's assimilation, because someone can be assimilated to help Sundays work better, to be serving as volunteers in the church programming, but never actually ever make any disciples. It's possible. It's possible. It's not a criticism of the megachurch approach. In fact, my heart goes out to the megachurch strategy, people in charge of the strategy, because it's difficult. It's hard to keep something going that's growing. Very difficult. So you find yourself over-investing on assimilation and all the while at the same time saying, can anybody who's a disciple make disciples? We don't really know. What's our strategy for that? Sign them up for Sundays. And so there's another strategy too that I think some of us have experienced, which is a traditional church strategy where discipleship is primarily attending classes to receive more Bible information. And we've assumed that that's discipleship. What we see with Jesus is unique and different. It's actually quite a bit more than that. And it's actually creates for us a problem, and that is this, that many long-time and lifelong believers don't know how to make disciples for all kinds of different reasons, don't know how to do it. If you were the preacher and I were the listener today, and this question were asked, how many of you don't really know how to make disciples? I would volunteer and say, I'm not sure I really learned how to do it. Now, it's not for a lack of trying. How many of you remember back in the day, evangelism explosion? Wordless books, wordless color bracelets. Anybody ever wear those on a missions trip or just in life? Those colorless or those wordless bracelets, and that all represented how to share your faith with somebody and tell the story of God. And you might remember evangelism crusades. You might remember VBS, Sidewalk Sunday School, Friendship Evangelism, door-to-door spiritual surveys. All of these were attempts to help us learn to make disciples or to reach people, or for familiarity's sake, the word outreach and evangelism. But if you're the average disciple of Jesus, you might struggle to explain the gospel to someone who doesn't know it, even now. It's understandable. You might struggle to explain God's story to someone. You might struggle to explain your own faith to somebody. We work overtime helping baptism candidates tell their story on video. Helping them to articulate their story is a challenge. People talk about, I had a praying grandmother, and if she didn't pray, I wouldn't be in church, but now I'm in church. Praise the Lord. And I say, or we say to them in the interview, tell us more about Jesus. Tell us more about the grace of God that turned your heart from this side to that side. And it's hard for people to articulate their story of faith and grace a lot of time, where it makes sense in our mind, but when we hear ourselves say it, we go, I don't know what that means all of a sudden. Sometimes it's a struggle for us because we didn't learn discipleship from another disciple living on mission. Or maybe because your primary learning was informational more than transformational, meaning that you just learned a lot of Bible trivia. You learned about the Bible more than you learned how to live the way that they lived in the Bible. So when Jesus invited these fishermen to follow, where did he start? You've got these fill in the blanks in your notes. Let me show you where Jesus started, okay? Jesus challenged his followers to exchange their mission for his. That's where they started. The first question was, I have a mission and you have a mission. Will you exchange your mission for my mission? So when you first come to Jesus, one of the things that you're confronted with is you have a life mission, which is to kind of provide for yourself and sustain yourself and rely on yourself. And here's what Jesus said. Are you willing to come and follow me? I'm going to show you not how to do your job better, but to do a more important job while you're doing your job. And here's what the disciples did. They had to decide, what are we going to do with these nets? Are we going to follow him and fish for people, or keep fishing for fish? I mean, that's a legitimate question. I imagine them kind of wrestling with this and instantly trying to decide, what do we do here? And Jesus was asking them, I've got a mission, you've got a mission. And what I'm inviting you to do is make the exchange. Leave the nets, come and follow me. We're not doing fish anymore. We're going to do people. We're going to fish for people. And instantly, Jesus was asking them, would you consider living for a larger mission and relying on a greater power than your own? And I wanted to point out here that the disciples needed to start somewhere, and Jesus decided that their starting point was to follow him. Why? Because he's the master disciple maker, and he was going to model it for them. They had to be around Jesus to learn disciple making because he was the master at it. Secondly, the disciples needed to be trained for the mission. And what that means is that they didn't instinctively already know how to do it. Wouldn't you agree that you don't necessarily instinctively know how to make disciples? So Jesus invited them to get some training. And also Jesus, these disciples were trained for the mission by joining the mission. I've kind of noticed here that Jesus' method taught them the basics of making disciples while they were on the mission of making disciples. That's how they learned it. Jesus spent more than 3 years with them. And what did he do? He ate with them. He worked with them. He celebrated with them. He spent time with them in prayer and out of prayer. He spent time with them serving people. They were up close and personal. They knew Jesus personally. They saw Jesus interact with his family. They saw Jesus teaching publicly. They saw Jesus handling criticism for people that were calling him all kinds of terrible names like blasphemer and so on. And they could see what it looked like to submit to God in everything because they saw Jesus do it, and he was with them and near them for more than 3 years. The best training for mission happens while you're on mission. Now, I have to point out that there's no record here of Jesus ordering on Amazon Prime disciple-making training manuals. I have to point that out. which is very disappointing because I love training manuals. But here he has all these disciples with him, and he's not teaching them with books and fill in the blanks. He said, no, we're not going to learn in a classroom. You have to be on the mission to learn the mission. You're going to see how I work, how I function, the way that I handle things, and what are the priorities that I'm trying to teach you, I'm actually going to model you. And Jesus didn't have a book, a curriculum, or a class. Instead, here's what he had compassion in his heart. He had wisdom in his words, and he had the power of the Spirit in his soul. And that's all he needed to train people to fish for people. I myself think he did have an Amazon Prime account. He just opted not to use it. That's what I think. The mission itself is God's tool for training and transforming us. It's the mission itself. And you can see this in so many ways. If you turn your eyes away from the Christian church, you can actually see this in many ways. Have you ever wondered what would happen to professional athletes if all they did was train, practice, and talk about playing the game, but they never played the game? Now, I'd be willing to bet that most professional athletes would eventually retire from the sport because they never actually play the game. All they do is talk about the game, prepare for the game, watch film about practicing for the game. But when the game time comes, they never actually play. My opinion is that the greatest way to learn the game is to actually play the game. And then you go back and you review, how did we play the game? Let's change the way, what is the game teaching us, and so on. And this actually shows up on my favorite TV show, which a long time ago I got hooked on Deadliest Catch. See what I did there? I'm a professional speaker. There's so many reasons why I love this show. It's a show about fishermen who fish for crab in the deadliest profession in the world, and the Bering Sea. In fact, get this, true story, within a week ago or so, there was an entire crew and ship that went missing. And they're still looking for 6 crew members and the ship, the boat, 100-foot boat, fishing boat, gone. And if you've ever seen the show, you may have noticed that there are some people on every ship who are called the greenhorn. Every ship has a greenhorn on the ship, and these are fishermen who are learning how to do what? How to fish. How do they learn how to fish? Are they in a classroom? Are they in a small group? Are they talking about the pros and cons and the seriousness of fishing for crab and how much money they can make? No. They do that for a little bit of time, and then they learn to fish by joining the fishing mission, and they learn how to do it while they're doing it. The greenhorns learn to fish by fishing with the fishermen. Why is that? Because the mission itself is God's greatest tool for forming and transforming us. So the best way to learn something new is to do something different. If you're thinking to yourself, I'd love to do this, here's what I have to share with you. Here's the bad news. If you want to do something new, you got to do something different. If you want to do something different, you're going to have to do something new. And it's such a challenge, isn't it, to break out of the rut of what we always have been doing. I myself find it so easy, without even thinking, I get stuck in a different kind of mission. I call it the me mission. The whole mission of life is about me. And if we want to live for a larger mission and rely on a greater power, we're going to have to find a way to get off the me mission or to redeem the me mission, because these become our driving life missions. Make more money. Make a happy family. Some of you know about this, making my family happy with me. Making people like me, that's my driving mission. It's all I could think about. Make people know me, make people remember me. My mission that's driving me mission is to make myself more comfortable, more secure, more attractive, more whatever, you name it. But anytime we're stuck in me mission, we've got to do something new to do something different, and do something different to do something new, to break out of that rut. So how do you, in fact, you've probably heard insanity. Have you heard insanity defined this way? Here's insanity. It's you continue to do the same thing over and over and over again, and then you're shocked that the results haven't changed. And that there is a way to learn to do something new and different. And here's how specifically I want to ask you to apply this. Here's what I want to ask you to do. If you want to learn it, fish for people, mission, you have to live it. If you want to learn it, you have to live it. So what do I mean by that? I mean, here's the hard part. The hard part is it means that if we don't live it, what happens? We don't learn it. If you don't live it, you don't learn it. You only learn to live the mission while on the mission. So let me remind you, disciple making isn't learned in a book. You can read all the books you want about making disciples or living a life for in a way that is fishing for people. But it's not taught from a stage. It isn't learned by discussing it in a small group. Even if you know how to say the word disciple making in Hebrew and Greek, still not breaking out. This mission, I've noticed, is just like parenting. Anybody remember when you were getting ready to have a baby and everybody was telling you how to have a baby? Remember that? What you're going to expect and how to parent. Anybody else feel like it was all a foreign language, like blah, 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 coming in? And then eventually, despite everything you've read, despite everything has helped you to learn, despite all the advice you're given, you don't really learn to parent until you're a what? A parent. Actually, I should say grandparent, right? Because that's when you're finally like, I got this figured out now. So, in fact, if you learned to parent before you were a parent, I want to know your secret. I want to know, how did you figure it out? Because I realized the minute that we had our first child and they were in the house rebelling and really sabotaging our entire lives, my wife and I, that's when I really learned how to parent. And there's so many examples of this, right? Aren't you glad that your pilot learned to fly while helping another pilot learn to fly? Aren't you glad that your surgeon did many, 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 many years of surgeries with another surgeon while they were learning to be a surgeon? I'm happy about that, I tell you what. Listen, we cannot fool ourselves into believing that we can be disciple makers without joining a community of people who are making disciples so that we can learn how to make disciples. It is not natural. It is not instinctive. It is not something that we actually experience by books, classrooms, curriculums, stages, and conversation. We have to find a way to get ourselves with people because just like parenting, reading's not enough, discussing it's not enough, and listening to other people talk about it is not enough. Everyday disciples are by nature followers who have accepted God's mission to be disciples who make disciples. And here's the hard part. Because disciples fish for people, if you don't fish for people, it's hard to be a disciple. I mean, wouldn't you think someone's crazy who told you they were a surgeon and then you found out they never do surgery? I mean, wouldn't you think, I mean, they're off a bit, right? I mean, if you are, say you're a surgeon and you, so when are you in surgery? Never. How long have you been doing surgeries? I haven't. How are you a surgeon then in that case? And here's what we have to come to terms with. It's possible for us to think of ourselves as disciples who aren't fishing for people. And the reality is, disciples who don't fish for people really have a hard time being disciples. In other words, it's a part of the identity of a disciple to join a family of missionary servants who are sent to make disciples who make disciples. And you may have a coworker, a neighbor, a family member, a classmate, someone in your circle of care who God has specifically put you in their life to show and share the beauty, grace, and affection of God for them. Specifically, that's why they're in your life. You may have been given these people, access to these people, to specifically link them to your church family and to Jesus. Specifically, that's why they've been put in your life. You may have been given a career so that you have a means by which you can reach people who are in that career. You have access to people that you wouldn't have access to otherwise. You might already be in a small group. If you want to become a disciple-making small group, invite non-believers into it and learn as believers how your small group can listen to them and to love them in stunning ways and love on them. You might already have a Bible study that you attend. If you do, let me encourage you to do this. Move into a home and serve your neighborhood in ways that could only be explained that you're just a different kind of people who serve a different kind of God. Stunning, surprising kind of TLC for people. do something for your neighbors that is so challenging that you would need a power beyond your own to start it and complete it. Amazing things will happen if you accept this. You've got a few blanks there at the end of your notes. Let me give you these. This is what happens. If you accept this mission, this is what you will experience. Here's what we find out, that our brokenness and our ongoing need for God's help is exposed. Why? Because this is not a mission you could accomplish in self-reliance. And it's also going to remind us that we constantly have to keep going back to God because we need him, we need his help, and our brokenness keeps kind of showing itself. My self-reliance isn't sufficient to accomplish the mission. Secondly, our lifelong spiritual training occurs. And without joining the mission and living our lives this way, then we really don't ever learn spiritual training. We don't ever get the proper spiritual training. And thirdly, the power of the Spirit is displayed. Now, some of you might, over time, have discovered that there are phases of your life where you're kind of bored with your faith and bored with your own church family, and you're bored with Sundays, and you're bored with the whole thing. Just kind of, you know, I know you're not bored with the preaching, but I mean, a lot of people say that in other ways it gets boring. And you know what I want to suggest? Here's how to ramp up and amp up the excitement. Begin to live in a way that forces you into a larger mission beyond yourself, where you suddenly live every day to reach people who aren't yet reached, who are love people who aren't yet loved by God's church, and to care about people who don't necessarily care about your faith. In your home, in your own heart, in your own home, and in your own neighborhood, these people exist. And when you start to live this kind of mission, that's what happens. The power of the Spirit is needed. By the way, it's no mistake that in the book of Acts, Jesus invites his disciples to mission, and then in the book of Acts, he empowers them by the Spirit for the mission. You know why? Because the power they had on their own was not enough. They needed another overflowing power, and Jesus baptized them in the Spirit. Why? So that they could have memorable spiritual experiences? No, so that they had the power to accomplish the supernatural mission. They were given a supernatural power. And here's what I wanted to offer to you. What if it's possible that you and I never experience the power of the Spirit in our lives because we're not doing anything in our lives that require the power of the Spirit? What if it's all measurable? What if it's all me? What if it's all doable within my own self-reliance and self-dependence? I mean, that's just a possibility. Isn't it a possibility? So I wonder if you'd consider this. Maybe you don't believe that God wants you, can't use you. You know what we learn by studying the disciples? That Jesus prefers normal, weak, and broken people. If you have any questions about that, follow the life of Peter. And so I want to do this together. I want to learn this together. I want to invite our church family to take a step together towards getting ourselves settled into a gospel community of people within our church family who are committed not just to be together, but to be together for the purpose of reaching people who aren't yet reached. And I don't mean doing things like serve projects, raking leaves out in some yard somewhere. I simply mean sharing your life with the purpose of reaching people who aren't yet reached, in specifically in your neighborhood. So we have created an event. It's a 7-week boot camp. And this boot camp is going to show us what it looks like to live in a community that specifically is devoted to making disciples who make disciples. And in a couple of minutes, I'm going to ask you to respond to the invitation to join that community, to learn how to do it. And it's my hope that we're not going to permanently add something to your life, that we're going to show you how to inject something into your life that adds gospel intentionality into what you're doing, the way you're living, the things that you naturally and routinely do. And if we need to make adjustments, we're going to make adjustments. If we need to make changes in how we do it, we're going to make changes. But we're not going to give up on the mission of being a disciple-making church. So we're going to sing together, and